Hey, this is Jeremy. Just wanted to hop on before the episode started with a few announcements. We really want to hear from you, and perhaps the best way to do that, we actually have a subreddit now. It's just r/polyphonicpress, and I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. But it's always been my dream to have a community where we can all get together and talk about the albums that we review and just music in general. So if you want to join the community and start the community, really, because it's quite small right now, it's just r/polyphonicpress. And you can always help out the show in various ways. You can check out our Patreon and get these episodes the day before that they go live, and leave a rating and a review on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Those are great ways to get in touch with us as well. That's it. I just wanted to say that. And now on to the episode. Thank you.
Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is The Ramones, Rocket to Russia. All right.
Okay.
This is, we did the first album way back in the, I think the first five or six episodes that we did.
Did we do a Ramones? Wow.
Yeah, we did the Ramones. This is their we did their first album. This is their third album.
Okay.
So this is what it says on allmusic.com. It says, the Ramones provided the blueprint and Leave Home duplicated it with lesser results. But the Ramones' third album, Rocket to Russia, perfected it. Rocket to Russia boasts a cleaner production than its predecessors, which only gives the Ramones' music more force. It helps that the group wrote its finest set of songs for the album, from the mindless bopping opening of Certain Hop and Rockaway Beach to the urban surf rock of Sheena is a Punk Rocker, and the ridiculous anthem Teenage Lobotomy. The songs are teeming with irresistibly catchy hooks. Even their choice of covers, Do You Wanna Dance and Surfin' Bird, provide more hooks than usual. The Ramones also branched out slightly, adding ballads to the mix. Even with these relatively slower songs, the speed of the album never decreases. However, the abundance of hooks and slight variety in tempos makes Rocket to Russia the Ramones' most listenable and enjoyable album. It doesn't have the revolutionary impact of their first album, but it's a better album and one of the finest records of the 1970s.
Okay.
All right, so this album was released on November 4th, 1977. Genres are punk rock, pop punk, and surf punk, released on Sire Records, and producers are Tony Bongiovi and T. Elderly. Erdely, I think. Thomas Erdely, I'm not sure. Tommy Ramone is what he goes by.
Okay.
Okay, so there's 14 songs on the album, and they're divided 7 and 7 by side one and side two. So, the album starts with the song Cretan Hop, and we'll take a break, after the seventh song, which is We're a Happy Family. And, we'll discuss in, halfway through. And if you're listening along, I've linked the, which we encourage you to do. We encourage you to listen along with us. I have linked the album in the show notes to both Apple and Spotify, so you can listen on your preferred platform. And without further ado, here is Okay, here's the first song on the album called Cretan Hop. So here we go. Okay, and ending side one with We're a Happy Family is an interesting song. It's been an interesting album so far.
Yeah, it's, you know, pretty straightforward punk rock. Absolutely. I thought it was kind of neat, that song where they're sort of playing with the timing again. That's sort of cool.
You're right. This is like straight ahead punk rock. But it's got more of a pop feel too than a lot of other like hardcore punk and stuff. Like the songs are really catchy. Like Rockaway Beach and Sheena is a punk rocker. I mean, those are two hits that they had off of it. And I Don't Care had a really good guitar riff. I really like that one as well. And I think I like the cleaner production on this one as opposed to their first one. Their first album was pretty rough. I like the cleaner production on this. It feels like they've sort of learned. I guess the producer, that was his first recording as well. I can't remember the name of the producer on the first album. But they sort of did a lot of learning together. And it seems like they sort of like, okay, we kind of almost know what we're doing in the studio now. And get a cleaner production, a little more separation, I guess.
No, I agree. That's pretty much bang on. You can't help but when you keep doing something for a while, and you can't help but learn how to do it better. It's pretty rare someone so incompetent that they don't learn when they've been doing something forever.
Exactly. One thing I thought was interesting, I was just reading, is this album actually, when it was first released in 77, it really didn't sell very well. One aspect of that, or one reason, or at least something that was blamed on it, was I didn't know this. There actually was somewhat of a rivalry between the American punk rock scene and the UK punk rock scene.
Oh yeah, I've heard of it.
So he's saying the lack of record sales was largely due to fellow punk band the Sex Pistols turning people off the genre. With their, quote, antisocial behavior, as put by Arthur Brian J. Bowe. Rock music historian Legs McNeil relates safety pins, razor blades, chopped haircuts, snarling, vomiting, everything that had nothing to do with the Ramones was suddenly in vogue, and it killed any chance Rocket to rush ahead of getting any airplay. Joey Ramone also insisted that the Sex Pistols were partially responsible for the low sales numbers, concluding that before 60 Minutes focused on the Sex Pistols, Rocket to Russia had decent airplay. After this, Joey asserted that everyone flipped out and then things changed radically. It really kind of screwed things up for ourselves. And I think, you know, I've heard like the sort of like 10 years later or 15 years later, the grunge bands talking about how, you know, it was more the press that labeled it grunge music. And I think that it's the same with punk rock in the 70s. It's like, well, no, we're just a rock and roll band. And this punk thing that you think, basically, it was just the Sex Pistols that were doing that. And it was Malcolm McLaren, the Sex Pistols manager, who sort of created the image of punk rock. With like saying the safety pins and the spiky hair and all that, so it is unfortunate that like the press and everything, well, they want to put everything into a box and they want to put a label on it, and really like the Ramones, other than like maybe having the image of wearing leather jackets, like. I'm not saying they're not a punk band, but they're not really trying to do, like, they're not really trying to be a punk band, if that makes any sense. They're just like a rock and roll band. They're not a progressive rock band, so that immediately they just get labeled as a punk band.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. They sort of, well, they didn't invent the genre, but they definitely were pioneers of the genre, and they were early enough on during the rise of the genre that there really wasn't like any set rules as to what a punk is yet. So, I mean, I always heard that the MC5 coined the term punk. Actually, people called them punk, so they just decided to accept the term and call themselves punks.
Yeah, again, they were just a rock and roll band, and
so, yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah,
and that was in the late 60s.
That was, yeah, it was, yeah, the Detroit scene. Like, I always think like the Stooges and MC5. I know they were sort of friendly with each other, and
they were.
I think they actually. They got signed. I heard the story. They got signed. They're both on the same show, and they got signed at the same time. Iggy and the Stooges and MC5.
MC5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, that was the press saying, hey, punk rock or whatever, punk, you guys are punks. Cause they didn't, it was for the time, it was really aggressive music, and they didn't really know what to do with it. I guess. And so
no, but yeah, by the time the Ramones had come along, and it was still working its way up through the muddle of all sorts of other rock and roll genres that were around, and progressive rock was still really big.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you could consider glam rock sort of an offshoot in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah, there it really is.
In some ways, it's a predecessor, but in some ways, it was an offshoot.
Yeah, like the New York Dolls, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
T-Rex,
for sure. David Bowie, yeah. All those bands, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's all connected, really. And
yeah,
because you could even really, like, some of the early stuff, you can even say that Genesis was a glam rock band. A glam... progressive band, because Peter Gabriel was wearing all these weird costumes and stuff, and you know,
so were the MC5,
right?
At times,
yeah, yeah. So it's obviously the famous club in New York City, the CBGBs, had a lot to do with. I think it was a lot of it was bands weren't able to play anywhere else, like these kinds of bands. And I don't know the whole story behind the CBGB. So if anyone is out there listening, and you drop us a line because I'd be interested to know about it. But I think what happened was it wasn't necessarily all punk rock, but there were bands that weren't, it was more underground. Like you had Blondie and like the Talking Heads and the Ramones and all these New York bands that were playing this club, and it was creating a scene, and you could call it punk rock or punk or whatever, but it really just was anything. It was just like college kids, really. It's college radio, and they're not really into, you know, Styx or whatever whatever progressive rock had become at the time, which was like more of a, what they coined corporate rock, I guess.
Yeah. It was just a different scene. People wanted to take rock and roll back to its sort of simpler roots, and that's what they did. And they did it in different ways, and some of it became new wave, some of it became punk, some of it became, you know, whatever.
Well, yeah, and honestly, like, the song Rockaway Beach, like, if you, like, maybe... like turn down the distortion on the guitars, that's a Beach Boys song. You know, and like this is like pop rock, and like it's funny that you tweak something a little bit and repackage it, and people think it's something completely different, but it's really not. I mean, it's just getting back to, maybe it's sort of like, It's sort of like the garage rock revival of the early 2000s. It wasn't really anything new, but it was something. It was just a change. It was like, oh, like a refreshing. Like it was refreshing. It's like, oh, I remember when music was like this. I think that was at least this album sort of what was happening with that scene in the 70s.
Yeah, it could be. And and you just reminded me of something. There've been a lot of videos going around of people playing death metal, but without any distortion and maybe a little bit of tremolo, and they figure out, oh, it's basically just surf rock.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I'm not surprised. I haven't seen any of those videos, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, when you do play one, it's oddly similar to surf rock.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. It's you know, you, there are only so many notes, and you know, yeah, you, and I actually like those videos, and I'm that first, they don't surprise me anymore, because it's like, here's a song in a new genre, and it's sort of like, yeah, that it totally makes sense. You can do anything in any style, really.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess we'll get back to the album here. And it's the second side, and it starts off with the song Teenage Lobotomy. So here we go. All right, and ending the album with Why Is It Always This Way? I really am enjoying this album, or did enjoy it. I mean, I always like the Ramones. They're like, they have a really great sense of humor in their lyrics. I mean, especially with like Teenage Lobotomy. I really like this band. I always have. And wasn't super familiar with the album or as a whole, but I really, really liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff. I thought it was kind of cool, the covers that they did. I mean, Surfin' Bird is the weird song to cover, but it's a weird song anyway.
Yeah.
And that's part of their humor, is that they would decide to play something like that.
Yeah. It was like a novelty song in the 60s or something like that, wasn't it?
Early 60s. Yeah. I don't even know if it's kind of like a novelty song, but it was almost like really early proto-punk.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, definitely garage rock. Anyway. I've always loved the song Do You Want to Dance? I thought it was a pretty cool song.
Yeah.
I can't remember who did it originally.
Oh, lots of people have done it.
Yeah,
it's one of those songs where it's just...
Well, my favorite version still got to be David Lindley's.
Do you want to? Yeah. Bobby Freeman is the first one to do it. Cliff Richard and the Shadows. Who else did it? The Beach Boys did it.
That's right. Yes, they did.
Bette Midler did it too.
Okay. That's different.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those. I think it's one of those songs that is lots of people have covered it. Yeah. But I mean, they did a really good version
here. They did a really good job of it.
Yeah.
They kept it simple, but it was really good, you know, straightforward version of it.
Yeah.
Pretty good song.
Yeah. And that's the other thing was, I think it was I Can't Give You Anything. That was almost like a jangle pop song. Like I could see like the Birds or something doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's sort of a different tempo, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love the, like, I love progressive rock, and I love all the extravagance that goes along with it. And, you know, I've actually been listening to a lot of Pink Floyd lately.
Yeah.
And I love all that stuff, and it's great.
Yep.
But sometimes I love this too. Sometimes I just want some straight ahead rock and roll. And yeah. And this is what that is. And it's sort of like it's one of those things, I think, where, you know, you get onto something and you hear a lot of it, and then you're in the mood for something totally different. It's sort of like being a musician and, you know, you're in a band and you're doing this, you know, rock and roll with loud guitars, and you say, oh, my ears are ringing. So you do some acoustic stuff and then you want to pick it up again. It's sort of the same thing. It's
yeah,
really what you're in the mood for. And I think in the 70s, I think even though the album wasn't a big seller, and the Sex Pistols kind of turned people off of punk rock, I think at least in the underground and in New York City in like 1977, I think people were ready for a change, in because progressive rock had overstayed its welcome by that point, because you had like Styx and bands like that were just, it had become commercialized.
But even the stuff that wasn't commercialized, like a lot of bands that started off really good, they started to, it's almost like they were running out of ideas and they were just getting too bloated. So a lot of people wanted something a little bit more simpler, something that goes back to, you know, what made rock and roll great to begin with. And some of those progressive rock, especially towards in the early 70s, I love that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Because that's when it was fresh and new.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it happens with every scene, every new musical movement. It's just inevitable. Things were always going to change.
Yeah.
It even happened with punk rock. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, it sort of went away, and then you had the glam metal of the 80s, like Poison and all that stuff. And then grunge came along, which was influenced by punk rock. It's all cyclical, but everything comes and goes and everything changes. Yeah. And this is really exciting because it's just in the start of that new wave, I suppose, you know, punk and new wave sort of go hand in hand. Actually, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but New Wave was actually a term invented so that it could get played on the radio. It was invented by the manager, I think it was Blondie, who...
Yeah, I think so.
Who, like, they were submitting their music to radio stations, and they said, we don't want to play... We're not a punk station. We don't want to play this. So they had to say, well, it's not punk, it's New Wave. It's like, oh, okay, so put it on.
Again.
Yeah.
Just... Like, if you're a rock station, just come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, because, again, a lot of people were turned off of punk. I mean, other than people who were in the scene and knew what it was about, were not turned off by punk.
Right.
Because they knew what it was about. It really wasn't about, you know, people vomiting on each other. And
no.
Just downright debauchery and stuff like that.
You know, it's funny.
It wasn't Gigi Allen hour.
No, no. But you know what's funny is I heard an interview, I think it was with John Lennon, in one of his last interviews, like when he was promoting Double Fantasy, and he was talking about the Sex Pistols, and he was talking about how before Brian Epstein came along and cleaned up their image, it's like, well, we were doing that, you know, in Hamburg, acting like that on stage. But now it's acceptable. Now it's selling, but we couldn't do that back then.
Yeah. Yes, John.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you were doing that, John.
Yeah. But anyway, this brings us to the question, would you listen to this album again?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I would too. I mean, it's great. Straight ahead rock and roll. It's catchy as hell. And they're not taking themselves too seriously, which it's just a fun album. So I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We want to hear from you whether you agree or disagree with the album. You can let us know by going to our website, polyphonicpress.com, and going to the contact page. And while you're there, you can check out previous episodes and lots of cool stuff there. And if you feel inclined, you can help us out. If you want to help out the show so we can continue making them, you can go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. Always welcome to support us there. These shows will always be free, however, so no pressure at all. And all of those links will be in the description, so you can easily get them there. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.